Good morning, everyone. I'm Nicolas, and Knut, thank you very much for the introductory remarks. I'm very pleased to kick off the first panel of the day. And our topic today is important because we will discuss global supply chains, geopolitics, and the world economy. So pretty broad. So expect a lot from us today. We will try to cover all these topics in just 40 minutes, and I hope that we will have some couple of minutes at the end for your questions. So on the panel, I'm really privileged to have here a very diverse panel and distinguished members of the maritime industry. And to start from my left-hand side, it's Dr. Johann Killinger, who is the managing partner at Buss Group. And they operate in port logistics, real estate for logistics, as well as wind energy, gas and hydrogen, and shipping. So it's a full-blown energy and shipping company. In addition, we have Gabi Bornheim, Dr. Gabi Bornheim, president of VDR, the German Ship Owners Association. And Gabi leads initiatives in decarbonization, digitalization, and workforce development. And in her paid job, she's managing director at Peter Dürle Shipping. And then next to Gabi, we have Dr. Sadan Kaptanoglu, CEO of Kaptanoglu Shipping and former BIMCO president. And she's a key figure in promoting sustainability in the maritime industry. And then to the very left, we have Christian Richley, head of shipping at MPC Capital and chief operating officer of MPC Container Ships, with more than 50 container ships in the water. Let me kick off our session to talk a little bit about geopolitics. With increasing tensions on the political arena, and especially in the Middle East, as well as trade tensions between China and US, as well as China and European Union, as well as capacity constraints in the Panama Canal caused by droughts, we see that shipping must deal with numerous disruptions. And here comes my first question to all the panelists. Are these disruptions good or bad for shipping? Who wants to start?
I can start,
yeah, if you like.
It's up to you. I think we all know in this room that disruption mostly are beneficial for shipping because the tonnage miles become more and rates go up. That's unfortunate, however fortunate for this circle probably. This is valid for political disruptions, I think. And I also see, if I may say so, now, given that Trump is, at least it looks like that he's going to win, I also do not see a disruption coming from that. I mean, if you look back to his first presidency, he was talking about it, but basically nothing happened. Maybe it was a bit mixed with COVID in the end. So basically, positive. Trade disruptions, if Taiwan war starts, but I don't expect that might have a different impact. But so far, that's my view.
All right. Thank you, Johann, for these reflections. Who else wants to discuss?
I slightly disagree with Johann to start with that. Make it a
that's
bit
great.
More. No, I think if we have, we see, let me start with this. Shipping is a seismograph, and we are just having survived and became much stronger out of the pandemic, but then the Ukraine war started. Mm-hmm. This is a disruption again of our supply chain, but we are coping with that because we have developed this resilience, which is decisive. And yeah, you're right. This leads to now with the Red Sea crisis, with the Houthi rebels shooting at our vessels. It is, and shooting at our crews, which is not to be underestimated. We see that we have longer trade routes, we have longer times, we have higher rates, yes, and that way it is positive, but we have to see and to strengthen the importance of our business and our industry, and that is not to be overlooked, and to see how can we make people, skilled workers to come to our vessels to work on board, to work in this industry. these are the problems of flying ahead. And that's where I disagree with you. I think we have now the Red Sea issues. We have the Ukraine war and the Black Sea. We have maybe in 2 years' time the Strait of Taiwan, which is blocked. How to deal with sanctions against China? I don't want to have this minute taker on the wall, but we have to see that. But on the other hand, we have to adapt. And that's where we have to align our forces working in this industry.
So Gabi, your answer is a little bit more balanced here. That's great. Sadan, what's your view on disruptions?
No, I think we have to look at into two sections. As of today, because of the turmoil situation, disruptions are working for us. And the ship owners are enjoying the, you know, high freight rates. But as then, I have to echo Gabi. We are enjoying freight rates, but we are not enjoying the operation of our vessels because they are under constant threat. And our seafarers deserve much better than this. And so this is a concern for us. And also it is a concern for the future of our industry. And but having said that, because we are going through a big transformation, to make some money is not a bad thing, actually. Because, you know, we have more than 72,000 vessels and the average fleet is like, I don't know, 22 in worldwide. So we need new vessels. And of course, but we need then sustainable vessels. And so then it brings us the idea of transformation. So this transformation, which is decarbonization, which is the elephant in the room, always, constantly. And so we need a collaboration, which I will call the, you know, for not amongst the ship owners or ship owners and charterers, but way bigger than that. So for that, disruption is not good. Because when there is a disruption politically, then economically, and then people, the countries, and other participants who actually make this transformation happen will focus on other things. So in that sense, for the longer term, we need the stability instead of disruption. Thank you.
Yeah, so if I may summarize it, disruption good in short term, but in long term and for partnerships, it's not so good. Christian, what are your reflections on disruptions?
Probably also a bit more balanced. I mean, Johan talked about the economic effects and obviously added a lot of money to some of the P&Ls recently when we talk about the Red Sea situation and us not transiting. But there is obviously another element to that. It's the longer miles, which we've added to all our models now, have the benefit of, you know, we're earning more money, but obviously creating significantly more emissions at the same time, which is certainly not good, not only for shipping, for the planet overall. If you look at Ukraine, same situation. One of the results of the war in the Ukraine is certainly that there is a parallel shipping universe, which is in the making since a couple of years now. Call it dark fleet, gray fleet, whatever you want, but that certainly comes with a lot of implications in terms of compliance, governance, safety, which should concern all of us. So that's definitely also a bad element. So I guess it changes shipping. It's going to be much more inefficient if you look at these disruptions, but it's also more complex and to a degree more interesting.
Christian, thank you so much. I'd like to go a little bit into the tensions between China and Taiwan because you just brought them up. and Christian, you also alluded a little bit into that direction. So Taiwan Strait conflicts are affecting major trade lanes here. And how are you preparing and adapting to these geopolitical challenges in your company and organization to such a conflict?
At the moment, China-Taiwan is not an area where we have disruptions. So our ships are transiting the area. They are connected to Navarria. So in case any military exercises are being planned or actually taking place, then the ships are being suggested different routes and they are diverting. But overall, we are looking at a situation in Northeast Asia where back to the US elections and the topic probably coming up more often today, where we have the feeling or where you see actually that only the largest US overseas deployments in Japan and South Korea prevent some of the nations there to do something or to try something, which is very relevant to look at in future. But again, the industry is obviously adapting. If you look at the new alliance structures of the mainliner, especially Maersk and Hapag now, they are changing the routing. They are changing the patterns more to hub and spoke. So taking more smaller ports out of the individual trades and using more the big ports. And that's obviously with the aim to increase reliability and take out more of the risks which we are facing in these areas.
So it's good to have mobile assets.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Johan, you posed a little bit the entry question with, yes, disruption is good. On the one hand, disruption is good. On the other hand, we have had a quite changed energy security discussion here in Europe, and that was mostly imposed by the invasion of Ukraine. And the political agenda in Europe has changed quite significantly. How have you adopted in the BUS group your strategy to this changed environment? So how have you changed your setting there?
Basically, I believe in diversity in a way, so that we are active in various different markets to mitigate the effects of disruptions in particular markets. When I come to shipping, Leonhard & Bloomberg, which is an affiliate, used to be pure container shipping, at least for the last decades. And we changed that recently. We moved into the tanker market, also because of that. Several reasons, but that was one of the reasons that we expected also some disruptions to stay, at least that maybe was the last kick. And recently we moved into bulker, European sort of regional bulker market, also to be a little bit independent of this kind of big disruptions. On the other side, I think you're probably also referring to our LNG project.
Absolutely.
In Hamburg, close to in Stade. In a way that was a we started the project, and so Germany's first land-based LNG terminal, we started that in 2018. So we are not betting on a war between Russia and Ukraine. We simply saw that Germany just relied on one source, just pipeline gas, and I found this unhealthy, and I expected this to change at some point in time, that it changed this quickly and this decisively. Of course, it was also a surprise, and in that way we prepared for this kind of disruption. But basically my main takeaway is from my life is to stay on more than one leg.
So diversification is also helpful for resilience. Good point. Johan, you went into tankers. Salan, you are in tankers. And I'd like to know from you, the sanctions have been imposed on Russian oil and other products, and that as a result we saw a rising shadow fleet. And how do you see this development, and how should industry respond to such a phenomenon? I mean, you can probably answer that too with your BIMCO hat.
With pleasure. Although my president is here, so.
Under watch.
I think, the sanctions are used very much in, as a political tool. Mm-hmm. And of course, the whole logic is to penalize the country. Mm-hmm. They do work up to a certain point, but I would say trade is like a water and it flows, it finds its way. And of course, if the trade flows like water, and then there are parallel universe, which is inevitable, I have to say. But when we speak of the sanctions, that, ship owners always adopt. Always. Mm. So we are resilient, yes. And at the same time, it is becoming complex and complex and complex. Now we all have, you know, our manuals for this section, how we deal with them. We have, you know, divisions in our offices for due diligence. And on top of it, you know, with the Red Sea also, we have extreme, you know, security measures, mm-hmm. or we just don't go there.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, shipping is actually distribute wealth and also the, you know, distribute the essential goods of the world. You know, when we say this, this is not a kind of a big word that ship owners, you know, or shipping people invented. It is real. The half of the world will freeze, the other half will, you know, go starve. Very simple, not difficult, you know. But it is becoming like, oh, shall I go there? Maybe not. You know, shall we do this? Oh, maybe not. So this is, you know, and we have these constant discussions, hypothetical discussions, also with the, you know, our lawyers as well. And these are the dates that you really appreciate associations like, you know, BIMCO, VDR, because we need consultancy. Yeah. We need to discuss this in a more, you know, broader picture. We have to share, you know, what is happening to our fleet so that, you know, we can have one actually joint mind, to, you know. So this is what we've been doing. And when it comes to the dark fleet is issue from a lot of perspective. I mean, as I said, it was inevitable. I mean, people will not say, oh, since I'm sanctioned, I will sit in the corner and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And but having said that, you know, we in shipping in general did a great job in COVID. You know, we literally work in the, you know, despite of the, you know, well-being of our seafarers, you know, and we continue to distribute wealth. And now, I see there might be a reputation risk for all of us there. That is one thing. Another thing that is the safety and environment. Because we know that this fleet is not well-maintained. The insurance is a question mark, and God forbid if something goes wrong. And we just have the, you know, now the experience of, you know, tiny, but then it will be a disaster. And so that really keeps me, you know, worried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What should the shipping community do in order to reduce or keep it in limits? Are there any recommendations that BIMCO or VDR would give?
Well, I mean, for BIMCO, what we say is that let's keep in contact.
Mm.
That is very important. We have to know what is happening and how it is happening, you know, in a matter of not seconds, but days. So we have to know. And of course, then we have to be extremely careful, starting from the, you know, fixing our vessels. And also, you know, when our vessels sail, you know, we have to be extremely careful again, not to actually come across with one of these, you know, dark fleet vessels. So the things that we can do, I think, is limited on the operation side. But when it comes to the reputation, there is always we can do, because we have to be out there, outspoken about, you know, giving the good examples and be transparent and, you know, emphasize always the best bits of shipping, because that is also another problem. Shipping only comes to the stage, international stage, if a disaster it happens. I understand that, because that is a new news, you know. Happy person is not a news, but unhappy person is always a news, right?
Yeah,
it's the same
indeed.
Thing. But we have to really work on this.
Yeah, but then let's work together on this, because we also like to have shipping in a good light. Thank you, Saran. Thank you for answering my question on this very delicate matter. We see that supply chain and geopolitical tensions play very much hand in hand. And during the outbreak of Corona, Christian, we also saw that one of a very significant global disruption happened at a very, let's say, short time. And it was not a local phenomenon, as we see it in many other geopolitical conflicts. How did shipping respond? And have we learned something that we can basically take into future disruptions as well?
I guess as a world economy, we've all learned that supply chains must be much more diverse, broader based, and more resilient. Mm-hmm. And to that point, I guess shippers have learned their lesson. Otherwise, we on container ships wouldn't have shipped all the Christmas cargo pre-summer this year. So that is definitely in change, and people have adapted to that. But we also learned that digitalization is helping us a lot, and we changed a lot there. So when you connect the ships with broadband internet, if you use AI to control the access of board of your ships, etc., that really helps a lot. We have, as a group, adapted to more local strategies. We changed to more local sourcing to be more resilient in on that note, and that definitely helps. But I also think that if we look at the world today, and I don't want to talk about deglobalization today, but I think it was Martin Stopford on one of your podcasts of DNV who talked about that we are going back into an era where short sea trade is becoming more and more relevant. And I think besides tariffs, obviously, the disruptions are also one of the reasons why we are actually looking at more production moving again closer to the consumption areas and reducing to a degree also TEU miles. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so nearshoring and friendshoring would be the key word here. But do you also see that there is an increase, I mean, a sustainable increase in these, let's say, short sea shipping?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is it just a short term trend or a long term trend?
No, I guess it's a long term trend. Yeah. You will see more and more cargo being diverted away from the roads, from trains to ships. And that's, again, driven by technology. More and more ships are able to run on batteries, on short sea trades. We are active in a lot of projects, and we look at a lot of projects in Northern Europe, and there's going to be a lot more to come, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, all right. Now I'd like to move to Johan. BUS is operating in asset and capital-heavy sectors. What supply chain disruptions have posed the biggest challenges for your group, and how have you been addressing them?
So that the 18 minutes left, I think that's sufficient.
Yeah, then
to answer your question. Yeah, I think the main disruption was when I started at this, and basically the container took over, completely took over the break bulk business. We used to be a break bulk company. Active in the break bulk industry as a stevedore and port operating company. So that almost killed us and took us, I think, took 20 years to basically get out of that. The takeaway is, maybe to be more agile, as I said already before, to be prepared to not only stand on one leg, short sea shipping, as you just pointed out. I think the second big disruption, which not killed us, but definitely brought us to the brink, as many of you probably, was Lehman, which was started with a supply chain disruption, and then was taken over by huge oversupply and completely different world trade situation. Takeaway. As before, stand on not only one, try to stand on only one leg, but also be agile. I think that was very important. When Lehman hit, I think 4 days later, we took a plane, flew to China, started talking to the bank, to the shipyards where we had ordered a few ships, just to start to mitigate the problems which we saw coming. In the beginning, they were all looking at us like people in East India when the Columbus came and was new with these news, but in the end it helped us a lot that we were quick. Yeah. Of course, COVID then and others, but they have been covered.
Mm. Quite interesting, very insightful. It's very exciting to hear this firsthand, and I find this. So very good. Thank you, Johan, for the reflection on the, let's say, disruptions that your company has experienced in the last couple of decades, actually. So next, I'd like to go a little bit into rising costs, mainly induced by inflation. And Christian, your company, how have you been implementing and maintaining operational efficiency, as well as manage this cost and labor shortages? In this crisis of increasing labor costs, I mean, it's quite significant over the past couple of years.
Yeah, sure. But it's, again, also call for innovation here in this area and something we really have to do. Technology, again, helps. If we talk about our crews on board of the ships, it's not only appreciation, but it's giving them access to, I talked about it, Starlink as an example. Broadband internet is super, super high on the agenda, so that needs to be rolled out on every fleet, basically. It changes perspectives a lot and makes things then easier. We're using AI, we're using systems like ShipIn to control access on board of the ships, to make their life easier on board of the ships, so really help them, tools. We have gone so far to allow them voluntarily to reduce the periods they are actually on board. So it's a lot of things you can do. I think it's a bit more difficult ashore if you look at labor and if you look at new talent. It goes beyond simply recognition and you have to be very, very specific on personal growth opportunities now. I think we as an industry are not very good in promoting it to the younger generation at the moment and really need to improve. But at the end, I feel that if you are looking at, if you're working on new projects, on innovative projects, which do have an impact, not only on the industry, but also on climate change, etc., it definitely attracts talent, and that's what makes the difference in if you talk about hiring people, if you talk about keeping people on board for a longer time, innovative projects, new stuff. That's really, really helpful, and we need to work on it all together.
Mm. Yeah, follow-up question on that. How is the security situation influencing the choice of people going on board of a ship?
At the moment, it's not a big problem for us. Mm-hmm. We don't have disruptions there. So mm-hmm. I think it may be in future that you are again looking at some more local crews in certain areas to avoid disruption, really, and to make sure that the ships are sticking to their schedules, etc. But at the moment, it's not a problem.
Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Gabi, Christian mentioned we need to promote shipping more for young people. So how is VDR supporting its members in getting young talent?
Okay, we try on a more international basis and also national basis also to say how important shipping is mm-hmm. to make shipping more prominent and stating that 90% of the world trade goes via ships, that 11 billion tons of goods are transported annually via ships, but that is not enough. And so we had, on one hand, we have to make apparent how fascinating the shipping industry is, how diverse, how easily you get access to high-tech industry, because that's what our ships are. Mm-hmm. Decarbonization is something to which we can contribute. As a young person coming on board, we are there. We want to decarbonize until 2050, and we do all efforts to do that. So slowly, slowly we're getting there. But this makes, in my view, and the ability to have a steep career mm-hmm. on board of a vessel and even thereafter, to show all the varieties you have as a career in shipping, or to make a career in shipping, that has to be more and more made apparent. And what VDR actually does since decades, which is unfortunate.